Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
August is a great Democratic month. We hell on wheels come August, okay? You remember what George Steinbrenner said about Dave Winfield? He called him Mr. May. The idea is to be good in November. And I tell Democrats some caution here. First of all, most quants say we have to win by three in the popular vote to win the Electoral College. So when you see a poll that says we two up, well, that's actually you're one down if the poll is correct.
Yeah, you lose.
The other thing is Trump traditionally, when he's on the ballot, chronically underpolls, all right? And if, so they came back late in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania in 2020, and it showed Biden winning these states eight
points. Underpolls meaning Trump's going to do better than the polling shows?
I'm saying because traditionally, he underpolls. Mm-hmm. Traditionally.
Means he's going to do better in the election because people are too ashamed to tell a pollster they're going to vote for.
People are too ashamed to tell. I don't know that it's ashamed. I think it's maybe something other than that. Maybe some people are ashamed to say it, but they just shouldn't be. That's James Carville talking to Bill Maher on how these polls are shaping up and what that's going to mean for this election coming up. How much do you love polls? Probably, if you like them, you like them more than I do. I don't love polling in general, because even when you listen to them talk about polls right here in this conversation, they're talking about how, like, what's the real language of polls? Well, then if that's the real language of polls, it's a huge difference. If they said it's a 3-point shift from where Donald Trump actually will be to how he polls, the majority of these polls, if Harris is up, is by 1 or 2 points, which is a dramatic difference come election day, should that 3-point swing be put into place. There's a lot of questions right now behind what Kamala Harris is actually going to do in her presidency. And the questions mount and we get no answers because she doesn't go talk to anybody to answer the questions that we might have.
They also want to change the rules. You know, the deal was we keep the same rules. Now all of a sudden they want to make a change in the rules because she can't answer questions. Why doesn't she do a couple of question answer? Why doesn't she do something like I'm doing right now? She can't talk. We can't have another dummy as a president, okay? We cannot have a dummy. And the people from Vietnam agree with that.
That's Donald Trump, you know, pointing out the fact that there are questions that need to be answered, but Kamala Harris won't show up to answer them because she can't. He says we can't have another dummy as a president, and you can take that for whatever you want. That's the Donald Trump way of talking. The YouTube live chat poll for today is who is more unlikable, Trump or Harris. There are people who hear that, who hear Donald Trump make a comment like that, and there he goes again. And, you know, he's calling people names and he's saying these things. And, it, you know, there's something about that that really resonates with me when it comes to the criticisms that are out there from Donald Trump or towards Donald Trump. Because when he calls Kamala Harris a dummy, there are people who maybe are on the fence. They're moderates, or they know that Kamala Harris would be a disaster for this country. They knew that Joe Biden would be as well. They maybe weren't going to vote for Joe Biden. They don't know what to do with Kamala Harris, but they feel like they can't vote for Donald Trump. When Donald Trump calls people dummies like that, those people will say, see, there he goes again. Why does he need to do that? I don't understand anybody whose feelings are so sensitive that when they hear Donald Trump call Kamala Harris a dummy, which, is it a nasty way to go about your business? It's no less nasty than anything the Democrats have done to Donald Trump. In fact, it's like preschool stuff compared to the actual aggression and lawfare that they've thrown against Donald Trump. He's almost been assassinated. So when you look at everything that's being thrown at Donald Trump, people will criticize him and, you know, they want him to straighten his tie and to be all ho, 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 ho about everything, where everything is so, you know, above board. It's never been him. He's always been a straight shooter. He doesn't polish it for people like you and me to feel good about his words, because he says what he means and he means what he says. You know, I feel like a lot of people, they bristle at that dummy comment because they know that when they're talking to somebody else, they're going to have to justify the dummy comment to another voter who might judge that other individual voter for supporting someone who'd call people dummies. And the truth is that they're only calling those names back because they feel like they keep you from talking at all when they put you on the spot like that. You want to say, you know what, gosh, I don't like that he says those things, but there's no way in heck that I can vote for myself by voting for Kamala Harris. It'd be a direct vote against my own best interests to vote for Kamala Harris. And you're telling me that I should vote for her because Donald Trump says words that you don't like? It's such a shallow and frankly stupid argument that we would be that worried about. You know, if you think about celebrities and athletes and musicians, like, they say stupid stuff all the time. You still listen to their music, watch their games, and go see their movies.
Oh yeah, they do,
because they're good at what they do.
Yes.
And if they say something you don't like, you go, wow, that was stupid, and then you just move on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not actually doing anything for you outside of probably 2 hours of entertainment tops.
Yeah. It's like having a doctor with bad bedside manner. You have a doctor that isn't nice to you when they talk to you. They don't sugarcoat it. They don't even sand the rough edges off. They look at you and say, hey, you're about 20 pounds overweight and you need to lose about 20 pounds. And you go, oh, I don't like that. But the reason your doctor's telling you that is because he's identifying something that is wrong. And he's not saying it in a way that you like. But the other side of that is, too, you look at your doctor and your doctor's kept you alive for however long. So would you rather have a doctor that talks nice to you and is bad at their job, or a doctor that is rough around the edges, doesn't really have a great bedside manner, but is phenomenal at
their
job? And
what the left will say to you is, but Brad, what's wrong with wanting to have a great doctor who talks nicely to you? And your response is, I don't see that person.
Yeah. They're
not here.
I agree. That's like, they're like, well, Donald Trump said this mean thing and you're supposed to be a Christian. And you're like, well, Jesus isn't on the ballot, so I can't vote for him today.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Kamala Harris, who is very much bad at her job. She's been bad at her job. We've got 3.5 years of evidence of that. And then you got Donald Trump, who was good at his job, but said mean things. So I'm going to go with the one that's good at his job.
You have to look at the choice that's in front of you. You have to look at the options that you have in reality, not some fabricated fantasy that some other person wants to set up for you to dabble in the conversation just so that you can have a guaranteed, no good choice for anybody at the end. You have to look at, these are your options. And your options are Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. Plain and simple. I actually did my Saturday morning podcast that I've been uploading lately. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, I encourage you, if you're a Christian person or if you're interested in my perspective from as a Christian person, I'm using these Saturday morning podcast only episodes, which are usually like maybe 10 to 15 minutes long, to reflect on what's going on during the week, but as a Christian. And last Saturday's was centered around the idea that how can you be a Christian and support fill in the blank, which is probably Donald Trump for a lot of you, but how can you be a Christian and support that person? And I answer that question, and I encourage you to check out the Annie Fry Show podcast, or you can go to anniefryshow.com and scroll down, and there's a whole playlist. You can find that audio there. We can't live in a state of fantasy when the threats coming from the likes of Kamala Harris are so big and so broad and not detailed that should she be elected, Lord knows what she would do should she get Congress in order to pass these things. The idea of taxing unrealized gains is unbelievable. The idea of taxing estates in a way that they haven't been taxed before, the idea that you would have somebody come in and police the appliances you can put in your home. You know, all of these things are being spoken about in a way that's supposed to talk about a greater good. But the greater good is always policed by somebody who is profiting off of their version of greater good that they, by virtue of being in a position in government, can force upon the people. That's as un-American as it gets. And it's pretty easy to identify. I wonder if Kamala Harris's, that's a good poll. Maybe we'll do this one tomorrow. But it's if Kamala Harris's strategy to hide is one that could pay off, because Joe Biden did the same thing. And I think they're trying to, I mean, he definitely did more media hits that were like consistently disastrous, but nobody cared. He did media hits that Kamala Harris isn't doing. But he was able to do all of that under his own circumstances. He was able to control that narrative. He would speak off of a teleprompter when he was doing interviews with people to give canned responses. And I believe that Kamala Harris is trying to do her own version of that. It is absurd that we are a month into this campaign and Kamala Harris has not done an interview or a press conference. She wants to represent you in the highest office in our federal government, and she has refused to answer your questions. What even is that? How far do she think she can? I mean, there are two philosophies here that could be in play. The first is that they think it's a winning strategy, and they've won on it before. They think they can win on it again. I would go back to today's YouTube poll question on our YouTube channel. Who is more unlikable, Trump or Harris? And I assume that if they think that the hiding Harris is a winning strategy, they just believe that Trump is that unlikable, that there are so many people out there that above all else, nothing else matters more than the voters' hatred for Donald Trump. Because if that's the only thing and the thing that matters most to everybody, then it, no pun intended, trumps any policy. It trumps anything that she would have to try to convince you or persuade or answer to or prove that she's up for the job in an interview, in a press conference, in some sort of public setting that isn't scripted. If everybody hates Donald Trump that much, then none of that stuff actually matters. So why would you go out there and risk tripping and falling on your face when you know that at the end of the day, everybody hates Donald Trump enough? Or you feel confident enough in the system that's in place on election day that it doesn't matter either. The other possibility of what could be in play here is that they know that Kamala Harris is incredibly unlikable to the extent that should they put her out there, it's a done deal. She's going to not be able to hang. She's going to not be able to do it. We're going to have a debate on September 10th. Is it?
Yes.
And we're going to have a debate watch party once again. Free tickets, if they're still available. I haven't checked yet. Last time we sold out almost immediately. So go to 971talk.com/events and scroll down, see that debate watch party and reserve your seats before they're gone. If they are still available, hopefully they are, and you can get your spot reserved. But you kind of have to ask yourself, like, okay, what's our ceiling and what's our floor? And if your ceiling is where you are right now, end of the DNC convention. You got through the whole thing without having to articulate policy. Lots of famous people came and talked up Kamala Harris. Ratings were good. It ended and nothing terrible happened. No riots that ended up causing a major distraction for the DNC. Kamala Harris is sitting decent. She's competing right now. If you know for a fact that her unlikability every time she comes out is going to take her down a notch and take her down a notch and take her down a notch. If you know you're at your ceiling, you're not going to participate in trying to break through the glass ceiling. You're just going to say, we got to live here as long as we possibly can and hope that the downward trajectory happens so close to the election that it doesn't matter for early voters and for, you know, the end result being what it might be. I kind of think that that's probably more likely here. Joe Biden was a guaranteed loss. Kamala Harrison is a likely loss. And they're just trying to wait out the clock as long as they can with the unlikely possibility that maybe Kamala Harris can sneak in there with a win. That's kind of what it feels like to me, because I don't think she's got anything to offer. And I feel pretty confident in saying that because I watched a week of DNC. And she had nothing to offer but a reminder to you that you hate Donald Trump. And unfortunately for her, I don't hate Donald Trump, so it didn't work on me. There was no positive policy that was suggested to me that made me feel like, oh man, they really got something here. People are going to like that. Oh, except for the policies that they ripped and read from Donald Trump. Those were good. All right, let's take a quick break. Joe Concha joins us when we come back to talk to us about the impact of the RFK Jr. suspension of his campaign, endorsement of Donald Trump, and where does that leave Kamala Harris? Joe Concha with us on The Annie Frye Show when we come back.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
the things that he said, or that I've said, excuse me, that he's going to disagree with. But I think what his endorsement represents is that Donald J. Trump's Republican Party is a big tent party. I was raised by two grandparents who are sort of classic blue dog Democrats. They believed in having a border. They believed that, you know, you shouldn't have censorship in the United States of America. They believed in common sense economic policies. They may have disagreed with Donald Trump about tax policy, but they believed in some fundamental American values. And I think what RFK's endorsement really shows is that the Kennedy Democrats are actually more at home in the Republican Party of Donald Trump. And unfortunately, Kamala Harris's party, higher prices, doing nothing to fight back against the Chinese, to say nothing of a wide open border, that is not JFK's Democratic Party. It's not RFK's Democratic Party. We're thrilled to have the Kennedy Democrats where they belong.
Oh, watch out, Joe.
Joe Concha, Fox News contributor.
Well, Joe Concha joins us once again, and he's a Fox News contributor, of course, but he also wrote the book on Progressively Worse, Why Today's Democrats Ain't Your Daddy's Donkeys. Joe, today's Democrats are endorsing Donald Trump. Tell us more. This is pretty wild.
Oh, no, it's crazy, Annie. In my book, Progressively Worse, I dedicate an entire chapter to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.,
really?
Not knowing that this was going to happen.
You're prescient.
Maybe I gave him this whole idea that maybe you're in the wrong party. But that's the thing. Like, he makes all these points that now Democrats used to be, you know, peace, love, dope, and now they're the party of war, right? And they're the party of elites.
Yeah.
I have a stat in the book that I share. The top 40 richest congressional districts in the country are represented by, ding, 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 Democrats. So they're more about the coastal elites and the working man and woman. And obviously they're the party of censorship as well, which I think is a very big deal to not just us, but to RFK Jr. as well. He's talked about it many times. And the Democratic Party, the way they treated him is so reminiscent of the way they treated Tulsi Gabbard in 2020 when she ran for president. And in the book as well, I talk about how CNN during that particular race gave every Democratic nominee a 1-hour town hall. Of course, I had to talk about the climate crisis, no other topic, but still, it's an hour of national airtime, and when you have 24 candidates, you take that hour. Oh, that's right. They offered everybody but one person that town hall. That was Tulsi Gabbard, and Tulsi ended up winning more delegates than Kamala Harris. So go figure on that one. But she left that party for those reasons as well. And obviously Joe Manchin, a guy who actually you can consider to be a moderate. You're from West Virginia. You better be. And now RFK, and I think it's such a big deal, Annie, as far as it being a true game changer. Like, it could make all the difference in states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, because when you think about Jill Stein in 2016, Green Party maybe was getting 1%, and Hillary Clinton and others will tell you that she took away enough votes from Hillary to make the difference in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. So if RFK Jr. is polling 4, 5, 6 times higher than Jill Stein, well, what does that mean as far as these states that could be come down to, as they did in 2020, 10,000 votes, 12,000 votes, 20,000 votes? It could be enough that Trump wins this race, ironically, because of a disgruntled Democrat who doesn't recognize his own party anymore.
I'm glad you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard. We're speaking with Joe Concha right now because the news just came out. Fox News sent out an alert that former Democrat Tulsi Gabbard has endorsed Trump in this 2024 race as well. This comes on the heel, of course, of RFK Jr., who did so last Friday. You've written a book on this, and people need to check out Progressively Worse. I think it's easier to identify where we are right now to say this isn't the way the Democrats used to be, but it's harder to identify when you're in the midst of that shift and that transition. What did you notice about the times of change in for the Democrat Party and where they were going? Like, how did that shift begin to take place?
Oh, okay. Well, you look at the Clinton presidency the most, I think, Bill Clinton, and we may have talked about this already. I'm happy to admit it. I voted for Bill Clinton in 1996 because I didn't care what letter was next to his name. I do know that we had peace, right? We had prosperity. Now, the peace part, you know, was basically gifted to him by Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush when the Soviet Union fell. But still, you know, no new wars, nothing like that. Good prosperity. Economy was going quite well in 1996. And then I saw a Clinton that actually worked with Newt Gingrich as far as ending welfare, as far as at least the welfare state and passing welfare reform. We had a balanced budget amendment. Ooh, don't spend what you don't have. What the F is that, right? Yeah, but we did it. And then obviously Bill Clinton goes on the State of the Union, talks about how he will deport as many people as possible because it's taking away good jobs from Americans who are here legally, and declares that the era of big government is over. I mean, imagine a Democratic president saying something like that, right? When you hear Kamala Harris talking about, hey, we need the government to get involved in, you know, this whole price gouging, and we're going to fix prices to make sure that these greedy supermarkets who are operating at a 1% profit margin don't put prices too high, when it's actually inflation that's doing that and has nothing to do with the supermarkets themselves. But the point is that you look at the Clinton presidency, and then you look at what we have today as far as open borders, as far as spending completely out of control, as far as not just not working with the other side, but everybody seemingly running to Twitter, like the AOCs and the Adam Schiffs and the Eric Swalwells of the world, to own the cons, and just as snarky and as personal and hateful as possible. It wasn't that way even with Reagan and Tip O'Neill, right? They would have their disagreements, but after work, they'd actually get together for a drink and be like, all right, how can we hammer this out for the good of the country? I don't think Democrats operate in the good of the country anymore. They operate for their own power, for their own preservation, and we're clearly seeing that now with this election, where they got rid of their own sitting president, because not because of his health, by the way, and not because of saving democracy, because they knew we couldn't win, so they wanted a do-over, so they got the old man out, and now Kamala Harris's sugar high is coming to an end, clearly. And I think that Donald Trump now, with this RFK endorsement, we've already forgotten about the Democratic National Convention. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. We're speaking with Joe Concha right now, Fox News contributor, author as well.
Annie.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't answer your question. You said, when did the shift happen?
Well, so, yeah. What do you think it was?
After Clinton, social media coming about, I think the cable news networks, for CNN used to be quite reasonable. They used to be quite moderate. MSNBC used to have hosts ranging from Tucker Carlson to Savage to Jesse Ventura, right?
That's
reasonable guys like Dan Abrams and so on. Yeah, and then they just said, screw it. You know, we're going to let Keith Olbermann run this network, and we're going to go totally, totally to the left. You won't be able to tell one show from another. CNN follows suit for whatever reason because, gee, that's profitable, I guess. No, it's not. So I think those networks going in that direction, and so many journalists coming out of J schools now as advocates, as activists, and not actually holding both sides accountable. So I think the media has pushed this party in this direction, and then social media was the coup d'etat, where then everybody just decided not to be civil anymore. And like I described before, it's all about likes and retweets and getting invited on to Stephen Colbert than it is about actually doing what's best for the country.
You mentioned Joe Biden, how they booted him, and it really absolutely was simply because he couldn't win again. If he could have won again, as senile as he might have continued to grow, they would have absolutely kept him in there if they thought that they could continue this dance. Where is he right now? Where has he been? Today is the third anniversary of Abbey Gate, 13 Americans lost in that Afghanistan withdrawal debacle. He's nowhere to be found.
It infuriates me. And you know me, I'm kind of a happy warrior, happy guy. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm still playing, you know, in a league where there's a keg at every base in my softball league. So, you know, I'm that guy, right? But boy, am I pissed off.
Yes.
Because the fact that our corrupt media, all right, the stupid people that work in this business, or at least corrupt, I won't even say stupid, they actually know quite what they're doing, that you just allow this guy, he does the speech on Monday night, we love you, Joe, oh, you should be on Mount Rushmore, and then Tuesday he's gone, leaves his own party's convention, goes to California, stays in the home of a billionaire donor worth $37 million, right, because he's Scranton Joe, right, regular guy.
Yep.
And then after he's done with a five-day vacation, he doesn't even, like, go to the White House to work for one day. He's going to Delaware now for another nine? Who's running the country? I mean, it's ridiculous. And Kamala Harris, what happened to her, by the way? What happened to all this momentum out of the Democratic National Convention? She's disappeared, too. So I don't know who's running the country. And you say, well, maybe it's in the capable hands of somebody like Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense. The guy who got surgery for what, colon cancer, and then was out for 2 weeks and no one knew where he was, and he didn't bother to tell anybody. So I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know who's running the country, but we are in big trouble, because you don't think Iran or Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Russia, China, you don't think they see that everybody's asleep at the switch, and no one seems to care in our media for calling us out, saying, come on, this is ridiculous. So I hope that Americans are paying attention to this point. They better be, that's for sure.
Yeah, amen to that. Joe Concha speaking with us right now. You know, with the RFK Jr. Dropout or suspension of his campaign, he's going to stay on the ballot in some places. He's pulling his name off, and he said about 10 states where he could potentially throw the race towards Harris. Do you have any predictions that you're willing to make as to what happens in November? The winds definitely seem to have shifted after that Friday announcement.
Yeah, two Friday announcements, right? One, the RFK Jr. endorsement. And then the Friday before that, I talked about Kamala Harris unveiled economic plan. Doesn't take any questions, of course. But when she went down that road, she has the worst instincts. It's quite remarkable to watch. All you had to do was, like, act like you're centrist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe say, yeah, you know, we're going to cut taxes for the middle class, or just things that, you know, are, it's like being against cancer, right? Like easy things that test well from a polling perspective. And she goes to the left like that with that whole price fixing thing. $25,000 per person if you want to buy a new home. Were you alive in 2008 when you saw what happened when we did something like that? So it was just so stupid. And even when CNN, Washington Post, New York Times called her out, like, yeah, these aren't very popular proposals and they're not good ideas. They didn't mention it once again at that Democratic National Convention, did they? So I think that was a big hole as far as her armor is concerned, and then RFK as well. You asked me to make a prediction, Annie. I mean, put it this way, in January 2020, when I was asked this question, I said Trump wins in a landslide for the same reasons I listed when why I voted for Clinton. We have peace, we have prosperity, and when you're an incumbent, you win big. And then COVID hit, and everything got completely turned on its head. So if things hold, I'll put that disclaimer. If things are as they are today, right, then I will say that Trump wins Pennsylvania. He wins Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin. He could still lose, and he still wins the election.
Mm-hmm.
And he could still, like, pull a surprise in a state like Virginia. I'm not sold that those states are now completely out of touch because Kamala Harris is the nominee and not Joe Biden. But I think in the end, Andy, to be honest with you, that September 10th debate on ABC is the whole ballgame, quite frankly. If she shows up and suddenly we get the word salads again, and she can't defend any of these positions because they're all indefensible, right? Wait,
yes.
You said you were 100% for fracking. Now you're against it? And by the way, why haven't you said that? Why are campaign surrogates saying something like that? Why do sanctuary cities work? Why do you think we should abolish ICE? Why do you think a man can get pregnant? I could go on and on, but we know when you take her out of a teleprompter, she's the Ron Burgundy of candidates. You put her in a teleprompter, she will read, and she reads it well. But just like Joe Biden, she is not good on her feet, can't speak extemporaneously. And I think if Trump has the discipline like he had against Biden, and if these ABC debate moderators aren't complete hacks, and ask some decent questions, I know it's going to be biased, but as long as you get enough in there that are relevant as far as inflation, crime, the border, foreign policy, I think that she's going to be exposed in a big way. Mm-hmm. And I think that she won't be able to turn it around from that point. And maybe even in October, we'll be hearing about, you know, that Josh Shapiro looks like a really good candidate.
I know, it's totally. I don't know how it works, but I figure if there's a way to make it happen, they could potentially do that. You know, Jake Tapper and Dana Bash at CNN surprised everybody and ran a very complimentary, nice things to them about that debate. They did a good job. It was fair. Yep. It was balanced. Didn't feel like they were going for one candidate or the other. Although by being fair, it almost felt like they were going for Trump. And Donald Trump stayed within himself. And so to me, it's like a reminder that both of those things are possible once again in this next debate. And it will be absolutely consequential for the future of America's history. I mean, it's a big, bold statement, but I think it's a true one. Joe, thank you. We always love having your fire and energy on the show and look forward to having you back again soon.
Always something to talk about, Annie.
That's for sure.
Song. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. He's the author of Progressively Worse, Why Today's Democrats Ain't Your Daddy's Donkeys. His first book was about Joe Biden and the terrible, no good, awful, terrible, whatever presidency. And I think Joe Concha might have been responsible for ending the Joe Biden presidency. And now he is talking. He wrote the book about the Democrat Party and where they were and where they are right now. As we are in the moments getting news alerts of more Democrats who were former Democrats who left the Democratic Party, became independents, endorsing Donald Trump. Tulsi Gabbard officially throwing her endorsement behind Donald Trump on the heels of Friday's endorsement from RFK Jr. Who's next? I have a feeling there are going to be more, and I'm looking forward to all of it. Joe Concha, love having him on the show. Fox News contributor as well. If you are on X, go tweet at him at Joe Concha TV and tell him thanks for coming on the show. It's always great to give that feedback to our guests, and they love to hear it. All right, let's take a quick break. Ryan Wiggins back in studio here in just a minute, and we will discuss the poll for today. Who is more unlikable, Donald Trump or Kamala Harris? Annie Fry YouTube channel, come vote. Tell us what you think. We'll be right back.
Trump, how are you specifically preparing for the debate versus Harris?
I'm not spending a lot of time on it. I think my whole life I've been preparing for a debate. You know, you can go in and you can have all sorts of sessions. I watch Mitt Romney go in and he worked so hard. He 4 weeks he locked himself into a log cabin, and then he developed lockjaw. He couldn't speak. I watched other people. I mean, you have to be real. You know, you can't cram knowledge into your head for, you know, 30 years of knowledge in 1 week. So, you know, there's a little debate prep, but I've always done it more or less the same way. And you have to know your subject. And I think I know my subject. I think I know it better than anybody.
That is so true. It sounds arrogant. How are you preparing for the debate? I'm not. His answer is, I am prepared for the debate. And when you know something, you don't have to memorize it. When you understand conceptually the things that are going on, you don't have to take 2 weeks at Camp David to try to cram everything in so that you can remember what some other consultant told you that you need to say if this comes up. And then, oh, and make sure you give this counterpunch and drop this insult. And you need to make sure you say the word weird 72 times. You don't need to do all of that. And Donald Trump isn't managed. He just isn't. And yes, that means that he calls people dummy from time to time. And he says some things that are my favorite word that has come out of all of this is inartful, which I will use on my own when I say something that is wrong or comes out bad. I will say it was inartful because that in and of itself sounds artful.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't misspeak. It was just inartful.
Oh.
I could have said it better.
Well, that sounds very, it's very.
Arty.
Yeah,
it's an artful way of saying that.
Yes.
It's eloquent.
I think. So when he says that he's not going to prepare for the debate because he is prepared for the debate, perfect answer.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's true, too. Because he gives answers just like that, you know that he's telling you the truth. And you know that when he goes into those debates, he is speaking off the cuff. Like he said, I may sit down and they might tell me, hey, what if she says this? You know, you're going to be ready for that or whatever. He didn't even say all that, but I could see that being his debate prep, that they might hit you with this. What are you going to do if they do that? But he's pretty much ready for all that stuff because he constantly gets it from journalists. So I don't know what else kind of prep you could be doing other than what he is doing.
When I first got the opportunity to do this show, well, so the way I started in being like on air, I graduated with a communications degree from SIU Edwardsville, TV radio degree, did sports talk radio for 3 years, and then moved over to News Talk and worked as the digital brand manager here at 97.1 since February of 2009, and was in the background and very supportive of what 97 has been and continues to be. It's been such an honor and a joy to be a part of this for so long, especially in radio. It's not really, you don't usually stay in one media outlet for that long. It just is the nature of the business. I pray that I get to be here for another 16 years. I got the opportunity to sit in with Mark Cox when he had a Sunday show, and I would sit in there and we would have conversation, but I was very deferential. I would wait, you know, don't speak unless you're spoken to. And that kind of grew a little bit and I got my sea legs a little bit. It's intimidating to go sit in front of a microphone and just like say a really strong political opinion. It's like not
especially at the beginning.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Completely. And I had a lot of opinions. I could, as you probably can listening to this show, sit in your car and argue the points and think of the points. I bet you regularly you come up with things in your mind that I haven't said and then I say them and you're like, I was thinking that. Or maybe you said something to other people and I say it. And so we're on the same wavelength there. But when you have to go do it on a microphone, it's very intimidating. So I did that for 2 years. I sat in with Mark Cox and he was just the most wonderful, kind person to let me do that, because I think that most people would not be like, yeah, let her come in and sit on my show. Like, he's just a wonderful person. And I've always been grateful that he was okay with that. When he moved to middays, when Dana Lash moved off the station, he moved into Dana's spot. I got the Saturday show. Or I got the 2 hour slot that he vacated from Sunday. Turned out, we shifted things around and my 2 hours was on Saturdays from 5 to 7. In the midst of getting that show, there were a couple times where Mark would go on vacation or maybe he was at a wedding or there was something that he was gone for on the weekend. And the first time that I got asked to fill in for Mark's show is the most nervous I've ever been in my life. Infinitely more nervous to do 2 hours from Sunday on Sunday from 7 to 9 p.m. on 97.1 than I was to fly in a Super Hornet.
I can see that.
Way more nervous. And when it came time to, like, when I got asked to fill in, I've told this story before, but I had three separate subjects, three separate news articles or concepts or whatever per segment of a 2-hour show, six segments. I had three separate things planned. I wrote out, like, I made myself write out 3 points for each of those different subjects so that I would be fully prepared to go on the microphone and fill that time. And I was terrified that I would, like, run out of words to say. I was so nervous. Like, it was maybe an hour or two before the show was supposed to start. And I was thinking, like, I got to get out of this. I can't do this. I'm going to make a fool of myself. I got to cancel it. I did it. I have no idea what that show sounded like. I blacked out during the thing, whatever. Made it through. Here I am. So it didn't go catastrophically, is that a word, wrong. When I got moved onto this show and I started doing weekdays for 3 hours, I would go home. I think, Brad, you might have made a comment about experiencing something similar when you started here. But I would go home after doing the show for 3 hours and sit in the chair, and I would I would take a comatose level nap for 45 minutes. I would just sit in the chair. There'd be kids crawling on me when I got home, and my brain was like, enough, you're done. Sit still for a minute, because it was so mentally exhausting. We have to be laser focused for 3 hours straight with, like, 3-minute incremental breaks sometimes. It is really, really challenging. Now, today, I can come in here and do 3 hours of radio. I had a meeting this morning talking to coworkers out there. I can walk in and do this show. And because I'm in it, like, I am saturated in it. I get news alerts throughout the day. I'm always working, but I'm never, other than the time that I'm here on the show, I'm never, like, sitting down at my desk and filing papers and stuff. Once you start to do it and you start to know it, I don't have to sit down anymore and write out three topics for the 1:40 p.m. block after Joe Concha speaks. Make sure I have these three things and I know the things that I'm going to say and, you know, the jokes I'm going to try to make land. And I don't have to do any of that. In fact, like, when Ryan and I are going back and forth, he's going to say something really stupid here in a second. Just wait. He's thinking. He's ruminating. Look at him. Look at him. He's waiting for me to give him the path to go down. He doesn't know yet. Here, say something funny. He's shaking his head no. He's doing what I do to him, which is silence. When Ryan and I are going back and forth and having these conversations that usually go off track, we don't really talk to each other. Like, during the morning, we might see each other for 45 seconds before the show starts. Ryan doesn't know what topics I'm going to talk about when. Brad puts together a list of cuts that I can play during the show. We just collectively come in here, having been steeped in the news, and we have an honest, real conversation. I mean, what percentage of this show, Ryan, before you come in here, what percentage on a daily basis do you know what is when?
Well, I don't know anything.
There's one segment you know.
I know Wiggins America, but that's it. And you're right. We all have to be kind of studying everything so that we can come in. Because if you do try to say ahead of time, let's talk about this or let's do this and I'll do this and then you do that, it's just stale. You can't do it. It doesn't work.
We actually will even potentially kind of avoid each other, because if something happens, we don't want to have the good conversation off the air.
Yeah, once in a while, if we're here early for a meeting and I see you, and we're, you know, a lot of times we will sit together in meetings because we know each other, and we'll start, oh, did you see blah, blah, blah happen? We'll go, no, shut up.
Yeah, save it for the air.
Yeah, save it.
Well, and it's like in Friends, isn't it Friends is the one where they wasted the good, no, or is that Big Daddy?
It's Big Daddy.
It's Big Daddy. We wasted the good surprise on you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to waste the good conversation in private. We want to have our honest reactions and thoughts ahead of time. But you can't do that if you don't know the content, if you don't know the issues, if you don't have an honest, genuine individual thought or opinion or perspective on the issue that is just yours. Like, the reason why I don't need to tell Ryan ahead of time, oh, we're going to talk, like, if I'm like, so unrealized gains, I think Ryan's going to have a thought, an opinion on that.
You don't know exactly what it is, but
no. And I don't want to know, yeah. Because we can handle that in public. I don't think that Joe Biden could handle that in public. He needs to have information input in order to have output. And Kamala Harris seems more of a puppet than the rest of them, that she needs to make sure that she knows all the input in order to formulate an output. And it's like system malfunction when she tries.
And she has definitely not been tested by journalists, which is why you get this. You get somebody who will not speak to you directly unless it is written ahead of time.
I mean, even when she was tested. Have you been to the border? We've been to the border. No, you haven't. Well, we haven't been to Europe either.
Yes. What? But it's, again, it's like talking to my kids when I'm trying to get them to do their chores. I didn't clean the basement either. You're not mad at me about that. Well, I am now. Thanks for bringing it up. Who is more unlikable, Trump or Harris? Tell us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back. Thank you. Tell us what you think. We'll be right back.
Preparing for the debate versus Harrison?
I'm not spending a lot of time on it. I think my whole life I've been preparing for a debate. You know, you can go in and you can have all sorts of sessions. I watched Mitt Romney go in and he worked so hard. He locked himself into a log cabin and then he developed lockjaw. He couldn't speak. I watched other people. I mean, you have to be real. You know, you can't cram knowledge into your head for, you know, 30 years of knowledge in 1 week. So, you know, there's a little debate prep, but I've always done it more or less the same way. And you have to know your subject. And I think I know my subject. I think I know it better than anybody.
That is so true. It sounds arrogant. How are you preparing for the debate? I'm not. His answer is, I am prepared for the debate. And when you know something, you don't have to memorize it. When you understand conceptually the things that are going on, you don't have to take 2 weeks at Camp David to try to cram everything in so that you can remember what some other consultant told you that you need to say if this comes up. And then, oh, and make sure you give this counterpunch and drop this insult. And you need to make sure you say the word weird 72 times. You don't need to do all of that. And Donald Trump isn't managed. He just isn't. And yes, that means that he calls people dummy from time to time. And he says some things that are my favorite word that has come out of all of this is inartful, which I will use on okay. My own when I say something that is wrong or comes out bad. I will say it was inartful because that in and of itself sounds artful.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't misspeak. It was just inartful.
Oh.
I could have said it better.
Well, that sounds very, it's very.
Arty?
Yeah,
it's an artful way of saying that.
Yes.
It's eloquent.
I think. So when he says that he's not going to prepare for the debate because he is prepared for the debate, perfect answer.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's true, too. Because he gives answers just like that, you know that he's telling you the truth. And you know that when he goes into those debates, he is speaking off the cuff. Like he said, I may sit down and they might tell me, hey, what if she says this? You know, you're going to be ready for that or whatever. He didn't even say all that, but I could see that being his debate prep, that they might hit you with this. What are you going to do if they do that? But he's pretty much ready for all that stuff because he constantly gets it from journalists. So I don't know what else kind of prep you could be doing other than what he is doing.
When I first got the opportunity to do this show, well, so the way I started in being like on air, I graduated with a communications degree from SIU Edwardsville, TV radio degree, did sports talk radio for 3 years, and then moved over to News Talk and worked as the digital brand manager here at 97.1 since February of 2009, and was in the background and very supportive of what 97 has been and continues to be. It's been such an honor and a joy to be a part of this for so long, especially in radio. It's not really, you don't usually stay in one media outlet for that long. It just is the nature of the business. I pray that I get to be here for another 16 years. I got the opportunity to sit in with Mark Cox when he had a Sunday show, and I would sit in there and we would have conversation, but I was very deferential. I would wait, you know, don't speak unless you're spoken to. And that kind of grew a little bit, and I got my sea legs a little bit. It's intimidating to go sit in front of a microphone and just like say a really strong political opinion. It's like not
especially
something,
at the beginning.
Well, completely. And I had a lot of opinions. I could, as you probably can listening to this show, sit in your car and argue the points and think of the points. I bet you regularly you come up with things in your mind that I haven't said, and then I say them and you're like, I was thinking that. Or maybe you said something to other people and I say it, and so we're on the same wavelength there. But when you have to go do it on a microphone, it's very intimidating. So I did that for 2 years. I sat in with Mark Cox, and he was just the most wonderful, kind person to let me do that, because I think that most people would not be like, yeah, let her come in and sit on my show. Like, he's just a wonderful person, and I've always been grateful that he was okay with that. When he moved to middays, when Dana Loesch moved off the station, he moved into Dana's spot. I got the Saturday show, or I got the 2 hour slot that he vacated from Sunday. Turned out we shifted things around, and my 2 hours was on Saturdays from 5 to 7. In the midst of getting that show, there were a couple times where Mark would go on vacation, or maybe he was at a wedding, or there was something that he was gone for on the weekend. And the first time that I got asked to fill in for Mark's show is the most nervous I've ever been in my life. Infinitely more nervous to do 2 hours from Sunday from 7 to 9 p.m. on 97.1 than I was to fly in a Super Hornet.
I can see that.
Way more nervous. And when it came time to, like, when I got asked to fill in, I've told this story before, but I had three separate subjects, three separate news articles or concepts or whatever per segment of a 2 hour show, six segments. I had three separate things planned. I wrote out, like, I made myself write out 3 points for each of those different subjects so that I would be fully prepared to go on the microphone and fill that time. And I was terrified that I would, like, run out of words to say. I was so nervous. Like, it was maybe an hour or two before the show was supposed to start, and I was thinking, like, I got to get out of this. I can't do this. I'm going to make a fool of myself. I got to cancel it. I did it. I have no idea what that show sounded like. I blacked out during the thing, whatever. Made it through. Here I am. So it didn't go catastrophically, is that a word, wrong. When I got moved on to this show and I started doing weekdays for 3 hours, I would go home. I think, Brad, you might have made a comment about experiencing something similar when you started here. But I would go home after doing the show for 3 hours and sit in the chair, and I would I would take a comatose level nap for 45 minutes. I would just sit in the chair. There'd be kids crawling on me when I got home, and my brain was like, enough, you're done, sit still for a minute, because it was so mentally exhausting. We have to be laser focused for 3 hours straight with like 3 minute incremental breaks sometimes. It is really, really challenging. Now, today, I can come in here and do 3 hours of radio. I had a meeting this morning, talking to coworkers out there. I can walk in and do this show, and because I'm in it, like, I am saturated in it. I get news alerts throughout the day. I'm always working, but I'm never, other than the time that I'm here on the show, I'm never like sitting down at my desk and filing papers and stuff. Once you start to do it and you start to know it, I don't have to sit down anymore and write out 3 topics for the 1:40 p.m. block after Joe Concha speaks. Make sure I have these 3 things and I know the things that I'm going to say and, you know, the jokes I'm going to try to make land. And I don't have to do any of that. In fact, Like, when Ryan and I are going back and forth, he's going to say something really stupid here in a second. Just wait. He's thinking. He's ruminating. Look at him. Look at him. He doesn't. He's waiting for me to give him the path to go down. He doesn't know yet. Here, say something funny. He's shaking his head no. He's doing what I do to him, which is silence. When Ryan and I are going back and forth and having these conversations that usually go off track, there's no... We don't really talk to each other. Like, during the morning, we might say... We might see each other for 45 seconds before the show starts. Ryan doesn't know what topics I'm going to talk about when. Brad puts together a list of cuts that I can play during the show. We just collectively come in here, having been steeped in the news, and we have an honest, real conversation. I mean, what percentage of this show, Ryan, before you come in here, what percentage on a daily basis do you know what is when?
Well, I don't know anything.
There's one segment you know.
I know Wiggins America, but that's it. And you're right. We all have to be kind of studying everything so that we can come in. Because if you do try to say ahead of time, let's talk about this or let's do this and I'll do this and then you do that, it's just stale. You can't do it. It doesn't work.
We actually will even potentially kind of avoid each other, because if something happens, we don't want to have the good conversation off the air.
Yeah, once in a while, if we're here early for a meeting and I see you, and we're, you know, a lot of times we will sit together in meetings because we know each other, and we'll start, oh, did you see blah, blah, blah happen? We'll go, no, shut up.
Yeah, save for the air.
Yeah, save it.
Well, and it's like in Friends, isn't it Friends is the one where they wasted the good, no, or is that Big Daddy?
It's Big Daddy.
It's Big Daddy. We wasted the good surprise on you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to waste the good conversation in private. We want to have our honest reactions and thoughts ahead of time. But you can't do that if you don't know the content, if you don't know the issues, if you don't have an honest, genuine, individual thought or opinion or perspective on the issue that is just yours. Like, the reason why I don't need to tell Ryan ahead of time, oh, we're going to talk, like, if I'm like, so, unrealized gains, I think Ryan's going to have an opinion on that.
You don't know exactly what it is, but...
No, and I don't want to know, because we can handle that in public. I don't think that Joe Biden could handle that in public. He needs to have information input in order to have output. And Kamala Harris seems more of a puppet than the rest of them, that she needs to make sure that she knows all the input in order to formulate an output. And it's like system malfunction when she tries.
And she has definitely not been tested by journalists, which is why you get this. You get somebody who will not speak to you directly unless it is written ahead of time.
I mean, even when she was tested. Have you been to the border? We've been to the border. No, you haven't. Well, we haven't been to Europe either.
Yes. What? Again, it's like talking to my kids when I'm trying to get them to do their chores. I didn't clean the basement either. You're not mad at me about that. Well, I am now. Thanks for bringing it up. Who is more unlikable, Trump or Harris? Tell us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.